Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, December 9th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMED. In tonight's news, Badawat Water Council announces 100% design completion for Powers Creek Restoration Project. Senator McGuire partners with Food for People and local high schools for 10th Annual Humboldt Holiday Food Drive. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
On Tuesday, December 9th, the Badawat Watershed Council announced the complete engineering design for the restoration of Powers Creek near Blue Lake, an important tributary to the Badawat River. KMUD talked with Dave Farrell, the executive director of the Badawat Watershed Council. He said this project has been in the works for 5 years, and just now they have completed the design and are ready to break ground on the project.
The restoration plan design for 3,500 linear feet of lower Powers Creek has been ongoing for the past 5 years through a Department of Water Resources funded grant. And prior to that, we had an initial 30% design plan funded by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Fisheries Restoration Grants Program. So over the course of 7 years, my organization, along with our collaborator, the City of Blue Lake, and all of the other stakeholders, community members and tribal members from the Blue Lake Rancheria, have had input on the plan. And now we're at 100% design, finally. And we're getting ready to get funded to implement the restoration.
This project is important because of how the river has been historically used.
Back in the day, when Blue Lake was largely a logging town, there were multiple mills, and they took the creek and decided to just kind of cut a trench and cause it to go along the property lines to the west. So when you make a creek longer, it changes its profile, the channel profile, its slope, and it caused the creek to be more inclined for when dirt is in the water for it to slow down and settle. So now the creek bed is about 2 to 3 feet piled up with dirt and gravel. They call it a graded. And so what happens when it rains now is the channel doesn't have capacity for all the water in the channel. So it jumps out of, or it comes out of the channel and goes onto the floodplain, which is the town. And what we're intending to do with the restoration is not just make the channel a little bit deeper and get it back to an appropriate grade, but also make it a little bit wider and then provide some additional relief channels for so that it will stay in bank during the high water seasons. And then we're adding a bunch of large wood in the channel, and that large wood will serve for fish habitat, and we're going to add spawning gravel so that there'll be new spawning grounds for steelhead and coho, which go up that creek and use it for breeding. So that's where our improvements will end up in the next 5 years as it becomes funded.
Even though the plan is complete, the actual work is going to take years of projects, funding, and time to make sure the impact is positive. Farrell shared the grant process and the different sections of the river they want to improve.
Currently, we've applied for a grant in April of this year through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Fisheries Grant Program or Restoration Program. And those funds will help with funding phase one of three. So there are three different sections of that part of the creek. And our goal is to be working on phase one by July or August of 2026. And I say we're hoping to because we had to apply for funding early before we had all the information about the 100% plan. And so now we know that there are some additional costs. And so I'm looking at other sources like State Coastal Conservancy or other granting agencies to fund that using California's Prop 4 funds, which are becoming available. So that said, some of the plans we have are contingent on getting more funding. And currently we're hoping that all of it comes together for 2026. Now, if that happens, we'll be complete with phase one implementation. All of the changes will happen in 2026, but then phase two will happen in 2027 and phase three in 2028. And then we'll monitor that project for the next 10 years with the City of Blue Lake and community citizens and friends of Powers Creek to manage it, make sure that the native plants are thriving and that the channel is doing what it's supposed to.
The plan is to improve the conditions for salmon spawning and improve the flora and fauna of the area. Another important part that Farrell pointed out is that the project will also help with high flows throughout the year.
The design is for handling high flows. So right now, when we get to that point in the year, like in February, March, when the soil is saturated, and then we get one of those atmospheric rivers that comes in, and we get like an inch or more of rain, there's not enough room for all the water in the channel, so the water goes outside the channel and floods parts of the town. So our goal and the design is to make the channel bigger and allow more water to flow. But, you know, there are going to be those years where we get the 100-year flood, and pretty much all of Blue Lake will be having a little bit of water, not something that they would like. And so, you know, relieving the 100-year flood is more of a challenge. And that's, Powers Creek isn't going to do that. So, you know, that's going to happen. The 2-year, the 5-year, the 10-year floods, you know, these cycles are what it's designed more for. So that's sort of dealing with the water.
For more information on the project and others that the Badawat Watershed Council is working on, visit their website, badawatwatershedcouncil.org/projects. On Thursday, December 11th, from 3 to 6 p.m., Senator McGuire, along with Food for People, will be hosting their 10th annual Humboldt Holiday Food Drive at the Eureka Safeway. KMUD talked with David Reed, the Development Director for Food for People. He shared the history of this event and all the work that goes into it.
The 10th annual Humboldt Holiday Food Drive, and this was an idea that was cooked up by Food for People and State Senator Mike McGuire 10 years ago to get the whole community involved in fund and fundraising, but also get young people involved. So he originally approached the 6 largest high schools in Humboldt County, kind of, you know, central Humboldt. So Fortuna, Ferndale, Eureka, St. Bernard's, Arcata, McKinleyville, and asked them to kind of have a friendly competition. And it started out, you know, a little small, but over the years, it's gotten crazy big. It is now the largest single food drive that Food for People does during the year.
He explained this takes weeks of work and collaboration to get this event together. Students from different high schools have spent the last 6 weeks going around their communities gathering food and donations for this event.
The high school students have been actually doing the food drive and the fundraising on their own for the last 6 weeks. They kick off in the beginning of November, and they do a variety of creative ideas. They do put barrels around their school and, you know, bring, you know, non-perishable foods in, but they also go door to door in the neighborhoods around the high schools and leave bags with flyers that ask people to put food in them. They do a lot of social media, a lot of TikTok videos, trying to get people to give online, because we give them all a unique link that they can use to raise funds that gets credited to their school. So they've been working on this for 6 weeks, and then they'll show up at the Safeway in Eureka on Thursday the 11th. And each one has a time that they can come in. They like every half an hour or so, and they show up with like trailers, like horse trailers full of food, truckloads of food. One, I think last year, someone came in with like a steak-sided pickup. They had gotten a deal from a grocery store and like had pallets of food on the pickup. So I can't remember the exact number last year. I'd have to email it to you, but they had, you know, we had more food and more funds last year than ever before. Like talking about tons of food. and over $50,000 last year came in donations.
Donations are not only from the students, the community also donates to this event, and this year the donations are already over $30,000. They won't have the total number until the students bring the donations on Thursday.
We won't really know until, we won't really know about the food until Thursday and when the kids show up, depending on what they've gathered in their communities. We do know that sponsors, people that are businesses and organizations that are sponsoring have given more money this year than last year. I think we're up over $30,000 in sponsorships. People, you know, businesses and organizations that want to, you know, help the kids out and help the food bank at the same time. And then each school has been raising money. So we'll see how they do, but it's looking good. It would be really, really hard to beat last year. I have to be honest. It'll be a tough push to get to that. But the kids have been doing terrific. The high school students have been really doing some impressive things, going to businesses, going to their, you know, their own networks. So it's been pretty gratifying.
Reed explained that anyone can donate, but monetary donations go further in helping food for people.
I tell people, if you want to donate something, donate what you like to eat, or donate what your kids like to eat. But, you know, high protein foods are always welcome. Things like, you know, canned meats like chicken, tuna, canned beans, meals that are, like a heat and serve kind of canned or packaged meal. Pasta and pasta sauce and rice and beans are always great to have. And we do have an amazing amount of buying power at Food for People. So if people don't want to go to their pantry and look for things they can donate, donating financially really helps out a lot, because that way we can, we say that we can buy 3 bags of groceries for the 1 bag of groceries you could buy at the supermarket.
Reed shared his past experience with Senator Mike McGuire and how he really steps up for the special event.
I think the coolest thing is that Mike is really, he's really personally engaged. So we do Zoom meetings with the high school students, the representatives from each high school, every other week to kind of pump them up and get excited. He came to Eureka at the beginning of November to meet with all the high school representatives from each school at the the place in Old Town that has the mini golf, the indoor mini golf. And so he actually was able to find the time to come in person. So that was cool. And then he's out there, dumping cans on Thursday with, I think, the entire staff, the whole state Senate set staff for McGuire's team, comes up to Eureka from Sacramento and Santa Rosa and the rest, and just helps out along with all the other volunteers that we have.
That's awesome.
It's really cool. He also does not want to have anybody standing around to make a donation and then drive off. I think he requires everybody to chip in and help out. Collecting donations and getting them in the bins to be weighed. It's pretty funny.
Reed emphasized that everyone is welcome. He says it has been a rough year with food prices going up, and on top of that, CalFresh benefits were delayed last month, and Food for People wants to help as many people as possible.
Food for People feeds anybody who needs food in Humboldt County, regardless of what their situation is. I mean, people can see, there are income guidelines for some of our programs, but we have this food that gets collected at this food drive and all of our food drives mostly goes out through our network of pantries. And so there's 23 pantries that are spread everywhere from, Garberville and Redway, and then the Toll Valley, Alder Point, and, Bridgeville and Dinsmore, all the way up to Oreck, and Trinidad, Orleans, actually no, not Orleans, they don't have a pantry, Hoopa, Willow Creek. So all over the county. And this locally donated food mostly goes to our pantries and our pantry network. And it also gets distributed through some of our nonprofit partners who do hunger relief activities in their own communities.
For more information on this event and Food for People, visit foodforpeople.org. In state news, education equity groups press California to offset federal cuts. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Groups that fight for equity in education are asking the state to protect vulnerable groups as the Trump administration guts the Federal Department of Education. The Secretary of Education has moved to fire most of the staff and cancel millions in grants, aiming to transfer more responsibility to the states. The agency is supposed to oversee college aid, special education, national educational data, and educational civil rights claims. Dr. Christopher Nellum with EdTrust West says California needs to mitigate the damage.
We will experience drastic cuts to education funding, slashing of grants that students get to go to college, and then undermining civil and educational rights. Our state does not have to wait for the damage to come. We want our state to be proactive.
A coalition of education groups is calling on California to boost funding for state-based college financial aid, teacher preparation, multilingual learners, and minority-serving institutions. Sarah Lundy with the nonprofit Youth Truth says cuts to the Department of Education means the nation's report card, called the Annual National Assessment of Educational Progress, will be delayed and incomplete.
You're now operating without the information that you need to say, here's how we can best invest taxpayer dollars. So it's not a partisan issue. All families and communities, red, blue, Republican, Democratic, purple, independent, want students to be able to have the best possible education outcomes with the best bang for their buck.
The state of California created its own data collection program a few years ago called Cradle to Career. Governor Gavin Newsom is scheduled to release his preliminary budget proposal in mid-January. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, Supreme Court poised to expand Trump power to fire independent federal agency members. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The Trump administration is challenging a 90-year-old decision that limits when presidents can fire the board members of independent agencies. The decision is called Humphrey's Executor, and on Monday, the Supreme Court held a hearing on the issue. Solicitor General D. John Sauer defended the president's decision to fire Federal Trade Commission member Rebecca Slaughter without cause, and he called on the court to jettison Humphrey's Executor.
It was grievously wrong when decided, and cases from Morrison to Trump have thoroughly eroded its foundations. The court has repudiated Humphrey's reasoning and confined it to its facts, but it continues to generate confusion in the lower courts, and it continues to tempt Congress to erect, at the heart of our government, a headless fourth branch, insulated from political accountability and democratic control.
Justice Clarence Thomas asked Sauer for one example of a permissible restriction on a president's power to remove agency officers.
We don't believe there are permissible restrictions on principal officers of the United States who exercise the executive power.
The case, Trump versus Slaughter, involves the firing of Federal Trade Commission member Rebecca Slaughter without cause. But the issue has big implications for many federal agencies. And that drew concerns from the court's more liberal justices, like Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Having a president come in and fire all the scientists and the doctors and the economists and the PhDs and replacing them with loyalists and people who don't know anything is actually not in the best interest of the citizens of the United States.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor also questioned expanding Trump's firing power, saying the Trump administration is upending long-standing norms of government.
You're asking us to destroy the structure of government and to take away from Congress its ability to protect its idea that the government is better structured with some agencies that are independent.
The liberal justices are, of course, a minority on the Supreme Court. After 2.5 hours of hearing, the conservative majority seemed likely to back expanding Trump's power over agencies. Members of the National Labor Relations Board, the Merit Systems Protection Board, and the Consumer Product Safety Commission have also been fired by Trump. And as Slaughter's lawyer, Amit Agarwal, told the court, a ruling in favor of the Trump administration could put everything on the chopping block. The court is expected to issue its ruling by next July. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Nurses, healthcare organizations, and Dem Rep Laura Friedman pushed back against Fed cuts for student aid for some healthcare students. KPFA's Anthony Perazzo reports.
A coalition of nursing and other healthcare organizations is pushing back against a Trump administration plan that could limit access to some student loans. Students pursuing graduate degrees in nursing, physical therapy, and some other fields would face tighter federal student loan limits under the plan because it doesn't consider them professional programs. The revamp is part of an overhaul passed by Congress in Trump's Big Beautiful Bill. Under current rules, graduate students can borrow loans up to the cost of their degree, but the new rules would set caps depending on whether the degree is considered a graduate or professional program. Representative Friedman says this threatens the healthcare system everyone depends on.
We know that you cannot fix a healthcare shortage by making it harder for people to go to school and become a healthcare professional. Every empty hospital bed, every closed clinic, every delayed diagnosis, that's the cost of this policy. No one knows when they're going to need care, and that's why undercutting the next generation of medical professionals puts us all at risk.
Capping federal student loans could make the ongoing healthcare worker shortage even worse, forcing students to seek more expensive private loans and threaten patient care. The Education Department is defining certain fields as professional programs, including law, medicine, pharmacy, veterinary medicine, and theology, among others. Left out are nursing, physical therapy, dental hygiene, occupational therapy, and social work, as well as fields outside of healthcare like architecture and education. Arame Anvarzada is president of the American Occupational Therapy Association. She explains the purpose of occupational therapy and other healthcare professions.
It's to promote and enhance physical and mental health and well-being to ensure that individuals and populations can function in this society. The Department of Education's intention to exclude occupational therapy among other critical healthcare professions from its definition of professional programs will ultimately result in exactly the opposite.
According to a 2019 report from the United States Census Bureau, over 85% of nursing jobs are held by women, as are three-quarters of all healthcare jobs. Guillermo Mendoza Lujan is the Secretary Treasurer for the Local Service Employees International Union 121 RN branch. He says the changes are unfair for people looking to enter the healthcare field, especially those with disadvantages.
Becoming a registered nurse is dedicating yourself to caring for others. It should not come with a lifetime of debt. No one should have to choose between serving their community and staying financially afloat. The proposed Trump rule says nursing isn't a professional degree. Let's be honest. That's not just bureaucratic. It's insulting and flat out wrong. And it's a direct attack on minorities and women of color. This rule would rip away access to federal loans so many of us relied on.
While the plan to limit funding for healthcare students is still being finalized, the new student loan caps would take effect next July. For KPFA News, I'm Anthony Perazzo.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native actress Elaine Miles, known for her roles in TV's Northern Exposure and the 1998 movie Smoke Signals, has spent the last month contending with a run-in with ICE agents and the response to her sharing her story with local and national media. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports.
On November 3rd, Miles says she was at a bus stop in Redmond, Washington, preparing to do a target run when several men in camo fatigues and tactical gear appeared. For 45 minutes, she says they deliberated over the legitimacy of her tribal ID and if they were aware of her rights as a U.S. citizen.
I go, are you federal? Are you recognized as a federal officer? Do you have the warrant stating that you have right to stop me? And then they kept saying, we don't need a warrant. And I go, yes, you do.
Miles said the man often looked confused at her assertions and finally left when another man called them back to a waiting SUV. In the following weeks, as ICE activity continued around Redmond, Miles retreated from doing things around town, prompting concern from relatives and friends. She decided late last month to share her story, including with the Seattle Times, Newsweek, and Salon. She found support, but also toxic trolling.
People are calling me a racist, a bigot, hateful, you know, and then I even had some people say I was a pretendian. Oh, and I like this one. Miss Piggy, go back to the reservation where you belong.
Miles says she'll keep sharing her story and advises her fellow natives to carry their tribal IDs, passports, and copies of their birth certificates. Meanwhile, Miles is looking forward to her next TV project, a law enforcement pilot that will start filming next year.
Probably be like January, February. She's a knowledgeable cop.
Tribes across the U.S. have reported their citizens being confronted by ICE as President Trump's immigration crackdown continues. On Veterans Day, a Native woman in Des Moines, Iowa, had an ICE detainer placed on her, which almost led to her being put into ICE custody, until it was learned jail administrators confused her with another person with the same last name. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security did not respond to requests for comments. Without reliable internet, it's often challenging for veterans to apply for and access benefits, including mental health care. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, a Phoenix-based telehealth company and a state agency are partnering to help better equip veterans living on reservations.
So far, Janice Tallis Denny, who is Hopi and with the company Televeda, has delivered 16 military-grade kits containing Starlink satellite internet systems at no cost to nearly a dozen Arizona tribes beginning this year in Parker.
If I can do it, anybody can do this.
Her latest stop, New Pasqua, is just on the outskirts of Tucson.
It's a hot day today. We don't want to be out here too long.
Along with her is Dylan Delzato on behalf of the Arizona Department of Veterans Services.
Let's start with 50 of them, see where it goes, and here we are rather quickly. Excited to get the rest of them out there. And a big roadblock for a lot of vets is the internet connectivity.
Especially on tribal lands. Carmen Rivera is the Pascua Yaqui Tribe's Veterans Benefits Counselor and often travels to the Mexico border, meeting with tribal members living off-grid.
And when you give them, you know, information, whether it be off of this system or you give it to them in paper, they like that.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, Anthony Perrazzo, and Antonio Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605. Or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.